This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tine.
And I'm Bonnie North. Good morning. Dr. Mark Olsky is a mostly retired emergency room physician who lives in Fitchburg, Wisconsin, outside of Madison. But today, Olsky is in Europe taking part in ceremonies to honor the 70th anniversary of the liberation of the Mauthausen concentration camp in what was then German-occupied Austria.
Along with Olsky will be two other people who, together, share a unique story about their survival of the war. But rather than spell out the story any further in an introduction, we reached Mark Olsky by phone as he was packing for his trip. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I was hoping we could start by simply having you tell us where you were born.
The exact location is not known precisely, actually, because it was on a train that was en route from a labor camp outside of Dresden, Germany, to a concentration camp, death camp, in Austria called Mauthausen. So officially, my birth certificate says Mauthausen. I was probably born somewhat before we actually arrived at Mauthausen. My birth certificate also says April 20th, but there was no calendar available at the time. It was a cattle car that was used for cattle, coal, things like that. And the reason that it says April 20th is that there were some German soldiers who wanted to do my mother and me a favor to let me live, and most babies were not allowed to live. Most pregnant women were not allowed to live. But by saying April 20th, which was their national holiday because it was also Adolf Hitler's birthday, that apparently made me a little bit special, and my birthday gift was that I wouldn't be killed.
Well, and it's hard to imagine coming to terms with having that as your birthday and why that is your birthday.
Right. Well, it is. It's sort of, I mean, and it's really ironic in many ways, but I kept the birthday even though I might have been born on April 19th or 21st or 22nd.
Well, and the story of your birth is not shared by very many people, or perhaps no one in exactly that way.
Not in exactly that way, but my mother always told me that there were a number of babies, possibly between 5 and 8, born, including myself, born during that transport between Freiburg, Germany, and Mauthausen. She was absolutely positive all her life that no other babies could possibly have survived. She said, I barely survived. She didn't quite know how she had milk to feed me. She had essentially no calcium left in her body by the as the war ended. Shortly afterward, she lost all her teeth. Her bones became very brittle, but she managed, but she just didn't think there was any possibility. So about 5 years ago, I found that at least two of the babies born as part of that same transport had survived, also very narrowly in precarious circumstances. In at least one for sure, and probably all three cases, we all owe our survival to the American soldiers who arrived not long after we were born. And in the one case, as I said, for sure, was one little girl who had a required immediate emergency surgery, and the American soldiers arranged for that to be done by an American Army surgeon.
And there were some really fortunate circumstances that caused you to survive the brief stay at Mauthausen. If I understand correctly, there was no more gas to kill people.
Right. The train ride between Freiburg and Mauthausen took 17 days with lots of stops in between because many of the rail lines had been bombed by the Allies. This is a trip that 2 years ago I drove in about 3.5 hours on regular roads in Austria and Germany. But in this case, it took 17 days going through what was then Czechoslovakia and making lots of stops. So we arrived on April 29th. That's a date that we know for sure from various writings and people recording it. On April 28th, the gas chambers and crematorium at Mauthausen stopped working. They were either stopped on purpose because they were trying to destroy the evidence of what they'd been doing, or possibly one thought was that they ran out of the gas. Either thing is possible. I don't know that there was that anyone came to a definite conclusion, but on the 28th is when they dismantled the gas chambers. The soldiers who were guarding the train as they arrived at Mauthausen were told that their trip was pointless because it was no longer possible to, what they were going to do was essentially dispose of these now useless women. They had been working at an airplane parts factory. The German Air Force had run out of fuel to run their airplanes, so they didn't need the parts. Anyway, the soldiers guarding Mauthausen just said, it's all right, the lice and various diseases will kill them in a few days anyway, so we'll just shove them into some barracks and wait. But they also knew that the war was about to end, and a lot of the people who were working there, a lot of the guards, were last minute trying to get some character witnesses for what they figured might be some difficulties they would face after the war, and they knew it was ending. So that was part of the reason that people survived. My mother and others that I knew who had been in similar circumstances at the very end of the war were telling me that no one would have survived if it hadn't been for some of the Germans who were either naturally more humane than others or became humane out of a perceived need to get preferred treatment after the war.
Their own self-preservation.
Right.
How old were you before you began to appreciate just what it took for you to have a life story at all?
Well, really what my life was like was in a relatively protected environment. It really came to me very gradually. For one thing, even though I was surrounded through my childhood by Holocaust survivors, but almost none of them, really, essentially none of the ones that I knew ever wanted to talk about it. It just was so sad for them and so difficult to think about what happened. None of them thought of it as a miracle of survival. They thought of it as just a horrible tragedy. And my mother was one of nine children, five survived, which actually, in terms of what percentage of people in general who were in those circumstances survived, that was near miraculous, that many, that five out of nine. Of course, parents, anybody that was older than in their 20s or early 30s, just physically couldn't make it. So grandparents, nobody in my grandparents' generation, even among acquaintances that we had, survived. But I guess getting back to your question of how did I find out, well, they talked about it. They talked about the war. People talked about what had happened. We all think, as we're, I'm a child with plenty of food and plenty of loving people around me and getting to play inside and outside, in my early childhood, having friends who were German, whose families were Nazis, didn't strike me that there was anything unusual. Unusual was, in my early life, were people who weren't part of the Holocaust.
We'll take a short break now and return with more of our conversation with Mark Olsky in just a moment on Lake Effect. You're listening to us on Milwaukee Public Radio.
Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Mitch Tide.
And I'm Bonnie North. Let's get back to our interview with Mark Olsky. The Wisconsin physician was born in a cattle car en route from a forced labor camp to the Mauthausen concentration camp in Austria. His and his mother's stories are chronicled in a book coming out tomorrow called Born Survivors.
The camp was liberated 70 years ago today, shortly after Olsky and his mother arrived. They, along with four of his mother's siblings, survived the Holocaust. Olsky grew up first in Germany, then Israel, and finally the Chicago area. He says as he began to understand the circumstances that led to his birth, he started to better understand his parents.
My parents were protective of me to the point of sometimes, you know, forbidding me to do things that I was allowed to play soccer as a child, but with a lot of warnings about being careful not to get hurt. Don't worry about scoring a goal. Just make sure nobody kicks you.
Did you ever have any qualms about sharing this story with the world?
Not so much qualms. I mean, my qualms were really that I never considered myself an expert and really not that much of a victim in a way. I mean, I was a victim of being put at great risk. I was a victim of having my parents who were badly, my mother and my stepfather, who were psychologically damaged, and I guess they probably passed some of that on to me. But, you know, we were, probably less dysfunctional than most families. a lot of what they experienced in a very negative way was given to me in a positive way. I mean, part of it was just this burning love of learning and value of education. They just felt like, I think they weren't necessarily right about this, but they felt as if somehow they had been more, especially my dad, felt that if somehow he'd been more educated, things wouldn't have gone as badly for his family. And he lost his wife and young son in the war. So they were practically dedicated in all their life to seeing to it that I got every educational opportunity. So it was kind of hard to see myself as either someone who knew a lot about the war or as someone who could speak about the horrors. I mean, I knew the story. I knew about it. I didn't know, I didn't really become aware of things like Holocaust deniers and, you know, just people who still hated us. And you know, we had, it was just a very gradual realization. I mean, I did know that Jews had a sort of a burden to bear in the world outside of Israel. When I applied to college out of high school in living in the Chicago area, I applied to Northwestern. I'm sure I was qualified to go to Northwestern. And very matter-of-factly, the dean of admissions, without any embarrassment or feeling that he was saying anything inappropriate, explained that they had a quota for Jews. And that did pretty well. I didn't get around to my application until a little later, and that, they pretty much accepted all the Jews they were going to accept that year. And I, you know, to me that was okay. You know, hey, they're not gassing me. They're not. They're not shooting me.
And you ended up going there to medical school anyhow, right?
I did. 4 years later, 3 years later, they were offering me a scholarship to go to medical school. I was still expected to live, if I wanted to live, at housing provided by the medical school for a very discounted amount. I had to live in the that apartment building that was reserved for Jews.
And so, this was the 1960s.
This is 1965, yeah, 1965 to 69. Yeah, that was just normal. You know, man, again, it was such a normal thing. My family just said, look, we grew up in Poland. In Poland, the norm was if you were a Jew, you expected to get beat up every so often by your neighbors. Here, you know, they won't let you into their school. They won't let you buy a house necessarily wherever you want to buy it. But nobody's beating you up, and, you know, just live with it. And, yeah, okay.
As you're going back to Europe, it comes at a time when there have been renewed problems with anti-Semitism. Do you feel, is that coloring this commemoration you're about to go to in some ways?
Well, it is. You know, I do feel like it's a renewal of some old feelings. I'm not quite sure what causes it, although I think a big part of it is there's a kind of a dark side of human nature, and there are a lot of people whose nature it is to be good and kind, to be good-natured. Then there are a lot of people that will shoot somebody in the back if they think they'll get away with it because they're in a bad mood. And some that just sense that they need to dislike, you know, kind of classify people and have groups that they dislike and that they act out against.
And even, you know, not necessarily the anti-Semitic part of it, but I imagine that as someone who worked in emergency rooms as long as you did, you must have seen the result of that dark side of human nature on repeated occasions.
Yeah. And I should say, too, for every time that I saw the dark side, I saw multiple examples of a really wonderful side. Unfortunately, the dark side tends to be accompanied by people with guns and violent tendencies, and they tend to take charge.
And at the end of the day, it sounds like you've got the good side of human nature in you.
Well, I can tell you this. I mean, I did hear enough about the Holocaust as a teenager. When I was 15, 16, if you had asked me, what do I want to, other than, of course, if my parents ever heard me say it, I knew better than to even say it around them. But, you know, if you asked me, if I were to speak completely honestly and frankly at 15, what do you want to do with your life, I would have told you, I want to kill Germans, as many as I can. And that was immature. It was
But entirely understandable.
Yeah. But, so, because I knew that, you know, that the reason I never got to meet my grandparents, some of my aunts and uncles, had to do with them. And that they just randomly, without any thought, had just killed them, killed little children. And that my mother... my mother's take on it was, you know, they took all this away. If your life becomes about vengeance and hate, then they get to take one thing they didn't take, which is your soul.
Well, Mark Olsky, it is just an incredible story, and we're just so honored to have you share it with us.
Okay, I hope I've given you enough. That's very good.
Mark Olsky is a semi-retired emergency room physician in Fitchburg, Wisconsin. He's in Europe for today's 70th anniversary commemoration of the liberation of the Mauthausen concentration camp. Olsky was born in a cattle car en route to that camp.